Next, we want to look at the next layer up, the SOA. In summary, though, the utility computing you've heard is very dependent on policy-based management. There's a lot of standards forums where you should be involved. This is where interfaces are getting talked about and standardized in order to make it all work together, as well as there are some new areas that people are looking at to really bring more capability as we move forward. The SOA layer, as I said, got its starts basically with middleware. And a lot of the middleware came from app servers and the concept of building these appliances that could serve an application and then write the application in Java around WebLogic or WebSphere and begin building a bunch of services. We all thought that web services was going to go big at 5 years ago or more. Invested heavy in it. I think we all agree it was slow to start, although today, if you look back, a lot of the standards that were needed are now in place, and a lot of progress has been made as we move up this layer. Some of the capabilities here that are needed are to take your application and either put a wrapper around it that provides some of these interfaces, or if you're rewriting your application from scratch, then you build these interfaces into your application as you write it. But it's very important that you have interfaces that define the services as well as allow for an SLA as well as quality of service as you run. This infrastructure then needs to take responsibility for enforcing the quality of service and providing it as well as the access and execution of it. So it's very important as you design it, you've thought about security, you've built it in from scratch, and you make that work. The protocols are based typically on SOAP for messaging and then higher level. A lot of the data that's exchanged between these services is around XML. In fact, at Intel, our web traffic we carefully monitor, and about 60% of that web traffic is XML traffic between the various services or between our interaction with external companies where we're providing, getting orders and fulfilling orders all over the web today. An example of this in action is a project that Intel has been involved in. In fact, some of the XML middleware we provided to this is the England's National Health Service project. And this project is basically all SOA-based. It takes about 50 million users or clients, if you want to call them, health records, and it provides a bunch of services that can use that health record. So for example, when you go to the clinic, your health record is available at the clinic, and that health record then parts of it may be passed on to the pharmacist as you go there, or the insurance company, or eventually Medicare as you get payments back from the government. So this is all tied together in a service-oriented architecture. Security has played a big role in this, getting not only the XML but the access to records and do it in a secure way where you have access controls that provide that. Some of the key requirements around security for SOA is trust. You want the authentication, authorization of those records, as I said. Some of the standards there that are being utilized, WS, Web Service Security, AML, XML, DigiSign, a number of these. Now, these are the type of standards that are getting hashed out in the standards forum and people are gravitating to. Some of the risk management, a lot of us are aware of malware and viruses. That presents a whole new problem with services when you've got third parties that are coming in utilizing those services. So a lot of infrastructure is being put in place to mitigate those and handle them. And then reliability is another area where you want to do failover, logging, all of that has security issues and is also related to security. So I'd like to invite Peter Lee from Data Synapse. He's the CEO of Data Synapse to give his view of this middleware layer and how it gets automated, some of the projects they're working on. Peter?
Thank you, Richard. Hi, folks. Thanks for coming. I really have three objectives today in the next 10 minutes. The first one isn't really to sell you on the vision of utility computing, but to really answer the question that I think is probably topmost in your minds, certainly is topmost in the minds of lots of our clients, which is, you know, Peter, I haven't written my applications today explicitly to take advantage of a virtualized, massively distributed, heterogeneous, and shared environment. So how do I get there from here, and do the costs of integration offset the benefits of integration? So I'm hoping at the end of these next 10 minutes, you'll have a sense for how we go from where we are today, which is very tightly coupled and inflexible silos, to a shared services model. The second objective I have is to help differentiate and distinguish and build on some of Richard's and Bill's messages, and I'm going to talk really about application virtualization as compared to infrastructure virtualization, and try and create a simple framework for you to think about as you go forward in your own enterprises about the different value propositions of each layer. Lastly, one of our 60 or so enterprise customers has been kind enough to let us do a case study and talk to you a little bit about how are they going to a shared services model. It's UPS, $40 billion global logistics company, and we'll talk about, and then we'll run a short demo to give you a sense of how their environment looks like today and where they're moving that environment tomorrow. So before I move off this slide, I just want to say that our clients are all recognize that if you move to a service-oriented architecture, it necessarily implies a world of loosely coupled, interoperable, reusable, and shared services, and there's very little business value that can be derived from embracing a move towards SOA, yet tightly constraining them to siloed infrastructure that's static, over-provisioned, and has a lot of manual intervention. So I think as we move from that siloed infrastructure to a shared services model of utility computing, what is one of the key success criteria that you need to provide? And I think where Data Synapse lives, which is what I'm calling virtual application infrastructure software, is between the demand and the supply. But I think, let me just read here, what we do is we dynamically virtualize application services to scale over a shared infrastructure optimized by service priority and resource constraints. I think let me break it down a little bit more simply. We talked a little bit about, in Richard's speech, about the infrastructure being repurposed or how virtualization can mask complexity and create lots of value from automation and configuration management. But I think just because you can provision, whether physically or virtually, 500 Intel blades on demand has very little business value if the applications that drive your business can't dynamically take advantage of that capacity, right? So I think what we are talking about with application virtualization is the ability to orchestrate and distribute services over the infrastructure, whether it's physical or virtualized, in an on-demand manner and in a shared enterprise. There's really three key attributes that our software addresses in order to achieve this vision. The first is, and I think what's self-evident, is some form of policy-based management. Without a policy-based framework, you cannot move from a siloed environment to a shared environment. And to give you a sense of scale, some of our larger clients are today at or about to get through shared service and shared service environments of around 10,000 CPUs running dozens of applications across globally distributed data centers. So we're talking about our clients really exploiting this shared service model in massive scale with commensurate benefits. So in a policy-based execution management framework, we're really talking about the ability to prioritize services, schedule services, whether it's event-based or time-driven, scale on demand, and obviously sandbox each one of these services in a way that they don't interfere with other services running in the environment. When we talk about service orchestration and provisioning, we really mean the flip side of infrastructure orchestration and provisioning. So just like you need to physically provision and configure, let's say from a bare metal server perspective, the infrastructure, you also need to configure, deploy, activate, and take care of failures for the business logic and the data components that are going to be running across that shared infrastructure. And lastly, I think when you're talking about an environment of the many thousands of CPUs, it's very clear you need to have a self-managed environment. And I think, you know, one of our philosophies has been built around self-healing and about the fact that more information isn't necessarily better. It's not great to have a dashboard with thousands of services all flashing red if you don't know how to actually fix that. So the ability to have a self-healing network that can address the diagnostics and the alerts that are coming up and that can be extensible into existing systems management or middleware tools is quite important. So now let's turn to UPS. What I want to do before we actually run the demo is sketch out a little bit of the business context. So you're all, I'm sure, fairly familiar with UPS. Just a couple of things. The inflexible silos, the over-provisioning that we talked about earlier, are magnified, you know, possibly 100-fold with this organization. They operate in over 200 countries. They deliver 14 million packages daily, but they have enormous volatility spikes built around holiday shipping seasons and so forth. What they did is they wanted to carve out some low-hanging fruit, and we took a look at some of their most critical decision support applications, including online print generation for bills, package flow routing, pricing, other incentive models that they use to optimize their business. And with Group One, which is a subsidiary of Pitney Bowes and has about 800 clients, I guess, globally, we virtualized the Group One report generation application, which is running on a mainframe, and we distributed that workload on a Linux grid. And that's the first of many applications that are moving into this shared services platform. And as you can see here, one of the benefits here is that it cut processing time by more than 90%. To give you a sense of the scale, their weekend print generation runs were taking over 36 hours, and their daily runs were taking over 7 hours, and they were beginning to exceed the time limits for some of the further downstream processes that these print generation bills were depending on. So Richard, what I'd like to do is, let's walk over here and take a look at simulating the shared service model that they're creating. Okay. So what you should see here on your screen is, and then due to privacy concerns, we're not actually going to show real UPS bills. But what you see here is on the upper bar, this is a service view. So there's some existing services, assume they're package flow models or some other type of routing or optimization supply chain management applications, which are now running on their shared service environment. And they have a certain priority level. And there's been a bunch of throughput running through the system over the last hour. I'm actually going to launch the Group One application, which has been configured at runtime to be the highest priority. So this, you could assume that, you know, getting bills out and getting paid is a fairly high priority for UPS. So UPS, in the next, I guess, minute or so, we are going to be processing something like 40,000 pages of bills in a minute or so. I mean, it's just an extraordinary volume of workflow. And what this is going to, what this has really turned the light on for at UPS is they're going to add more functionality to the application so they can present more information to the users, as well as reorient their downstream processes to take advantage of this. So you can see here that a new service has been launched. It's suspended some of the other work on the grid. It's consuming more of the resources. And we're about 60% done, I guess. We're talking about a fairly small environment here. I think we're running on, a few Woodcrest servers, I guess, here in the background. But for UPS, the key benefits of this type of architecture were really changing from a fixed cost to a variable cost model, significantly boosting their business agility, and radically lowering their costs. And I think what we'll see here is at the end, we see a bill pop up, and I see I've been billed for $250 for using your time and resources, Richard. But if I kind of close this down, workload has resumed on the grid. And so I hope you get a kind of small sense in the scarce time we have together about how a shared services model can wield enormous benefits for clients by virtualizing the workload and reorchestrating that over a shared computing environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Okay.
So we've talked about the importance of not only virtualizing the bottom layer and managing it, the utility computing, you also have to design those services in a way that they're effectively virtualized and managed as independent services. There are a number of standard organizations here that are working together. Web Services Security, Web Services Trust, these are all standards at the standards organizations we've shown there. OASIS plays a key role in a lot of this. Next, we want to look at the top layer. The top layer really defines your business. It's the workflows that you go through to close the end of the month or to keep track of your customers, serve them with products, and then bill them and work through that. It's also the workflows that ties together your distributed company around the world as you roll up your general ledger or you do anything that may be associated with the close at the end of the month. Orchestration of these are very important. They're typically orchestrated by higher level languages that are being defined and have been defined. They tie your enterprise with other enterprises, and it's very important that you comply with a lot of different policies that are defined by laws that various companies or countries may have as you work between companies or across the companies. Example of this would be integrated supply chain, where you're working with all the way from call center services to distribution, inventory services, and you're tying this together in a workflow. Some of the processes here, again, take an SOA approach. It's built of individual services, such as Peter talked about, and then you want to tie those together in the higher level languages that are being defined. Some of the key standards being worked on here, Open System Interface Definition Language, OASIS, WS Beeple is another example. One of the things that we're seeing also, a lot of the data presentation or feeding the information to the user of the data is now being impacted significantly by Web 2.0 approaches. Merging together your data on a Google Map, things like this, now are also changing the edge of how this operates. Some of the companies providing innovation as well as products in this space are listed here. These range all the way from Linux-based open source to proprietary Unix on AIX or HPUX to Microsoft Windows again. So in summary, I hope you go away with a vision of what virtual enterprise is. It's happening. You're seeing the big corporations not only prototyping, but putting in real deployment now. You're seeing companies that are talking about tens of thousands of systems hooked together to provide this utility grid infrastructure. You're seeing a lot of services that are based on that, as well as workflow languages tying it together. Many large national projects, such as the Department of Defense or the National Health System in Europe. But I think the key thing is you're aligning IT with your business. You're not defining IT and then figuring out what can run on top of that, as we frequently did in the past. So it's almost inverting how this works. A lot of this is top-down driven, the policies, the business flow, and you drive those policies down through all the three layers that we talked about, clear to the hardware. The other key thing was some of the technologies, virtualization, management are key in this, along with the policies. Standards are an important place for us to continue to work together. There's forums where it's happening, OASIS, OGF, the Open Grid Forum, which is a merger of GGF and the Enterprise Alliance Grid work that was going on. Many of those are now at the higher levels beginning to define the interaction of those policies, what needs to happen. The basis for it is automation. And automation cuts costs. You know, it's still many places you're able to do it fully. Other places you still have people involved. There will always be support people for hardware. Much of that hardware, though, can be taken on and offline now with hot swappability or keeping it up and running. Everybody now talks about not just five nines, but going beyond five nines in their data center. A lot of it comes through the hardware, but it also comes through the resilience built into systems like this. Security is another area. This is an area where the industry needs to continue to work together. It's an area where all of us are aware of the problems that can happen in this space, the terrorism attacks and other things that will make this not work unless we put a lot of focus at working together and building security in from scratch. There are a number of forums going on at the show where you can go find out more information, as well as you can visit Intel's booth. We've got white papers there, and we've got people who can talk to you if you'd like to find out more information. So thank you very much. I appreciate you coming. Hope you learned something.